Welcome to the Once Upon a Leader in Africa podcast with George Nudu. We invite you to listen to influencers and opinion shapers narrating their experiences from their leadership roles in Africa, from the world of business, community development, government, corporate, social enterprise, among others. We will glean from their good, bad, and ugly side of their leadership journey and be inspired to overcome adversity, to pursue success against all odds, to be a great leader, and many other lessons. Welcome to the podcast, and here's George Nudu.
Hello, Janet. How are you?
Very well, George. Good to see you.
All right. And thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest in this podcast. You know, this podcast is Once Upon a Leader in Africa. And what I like to do is bring leaders like you to just come and share their leadership journey. So thank you so much for agreeing to come to this podcast. It's a great honor for us.
Very good. It's my pleasure.
Okay, great. So tell us, who's Janet?
You can say at a personal level, I'm a mother of two. I'm a family person. I'm a development person at a professional level. I've been in the development sector for quite a while, for about 30 years actually. Yeah, I'm a friend to quite a few people. I'm a Christian, a professing Christian. I'm a farmer. I'm a gardener. Yes, I've got a lot of interest in gardening. Yeah, I'm a coach and a certified executive leadership coach. So I wear many hats. It just depends on where I am.
Okay, thank you for that introduction. And having watched you, you know, I know I met you a number of years ago. You were leading one of the organizations where my wife was working. And just getting to learn about your leadership and looking at your profile, you know, on LinkedIn, I've seen some of the roles that you have held. Maybe just tell us a little bit about your leadership journey, where it began and how it has progressed.
So thinking about the session, I sort of went back to, I happened to have gone to a school where we were the first from one class, a new Catholic high school. And actually, in that new school, it didn't take long before I was a prefect, and then I also was joined the Christian Union Committee. We kind of had to do everything because there was nobody ahead of us, so we just decided what to do. Yeah. And I was among those who formed the Christian Union with the support of another teacher who was also a Christian. And so before long, we had a Christian Union committee. Sometimes we would take the sessions ourselves because there was no preacher. One time it would be this or the other. So I just found myself in that space where I was beginning to, you know, to lead, to take initiative about different things in the school. And I actually think that's when I sort of began to do things and work with people to achieve what they wanted. And why that is important is because I had actually missed to go to Form 1 in the national school. My two other siblings had gone to Alliance Girls and Alliance Boys. And when it was my turn, being the third one in the family, I missed. So of course, you know, it kind of dents your confidence. But now being in this new school where you are the pioneers, you just start doing everything. And so you suddenly find you're in all kinds of classes and groups and things. And I think that's when I kind of began. And so by the time I went from my L levels, now later in the school, I had missed Alliance Girls. I had a bit more confidence in myself. Yeah, so again, there I was able to join the Christian Union. But then, of course, with time, you go to college and all that, and you leave. And then as I started working, then I think I then began to take on a few more responsibilities. I worked for government for a while, and then later joined Norwegian Aid as a program officer. But after working for a year or so, Kenya broke diplomatic ties with Norway. and our jobs went on air 4 p.m. President Moi. So that was another shocker in my journey. And it was interesting because I had been very comfortable working at the Norwegian Aid when you have a nice office, a laptop, when people did not, actually it was a desktop those days when people did not have such things. And so again, having got to start afresh and finding my feet professionally in, going back to find a job as a program officer in an international NGO, you know, I think again, starting afresh and now a bit more aware about not taking things for granted in an office, or learning to take initiative, to learn to, I actually perfected now my laptop skills now when I was, after losing my job on radio. So I think all these things have contributed in different ways in my leadership journey, because then some years later, I actually then grew right from that program officer, grew to head a new department that was beginning to work with local organizations. Actually, we used to call it NGO support program, because this was the first time this organization was beginning to support local organizations in an organized way. And I think that role really pushed me. I had to work with a team. I had to figure out, I started asking myself, how do you get organizations to really own the changes they want? Not because you're giving them money. So for me, that role, I think manager NGO support program really challenged my leadership skills and my ability to work with others. And to kind of really ask myself deep questions. And actually that's how my interest in organization development grew. Because I then realized I actually needed to know, how do you change organizations in a long way? How do you get people to buy the change that they you would want them to have? So those became deep questions. And when I had a chance to do a training program on OD, I jumped at it without looking back. And that began a lot of things.
Wow, no, that's thank you for that. So in terms of leadership roles and responsibilities over your professional lives, what have those ones been?
In the development sector, I could say I really did any job that what when you say you are a program officer, you can monitor projects, you can write proposals, you can kind of review what's happening, review documents. I have been a program officer. I was once a monitoring and evaluation officer. I grew into a manager. And then I think actually after I took on that role and went ahead and did my master's, I actually then became a country rep for one of the organizations, ActionAid in Tanzania. They needed somebody to go and start a new program. And I had the opportunity to actually take that role. And 2 years, or slightly less than 2 years later, I became a country director in Tanzania. So, and then later on, I then actually became 6 years. I did 6 years in Tanzania and then later came to work at Kenya Community Development Foundation as the chief executive. So I could say I've grown through the ranks in the development sector, I think to the most senior, because then I added two organizations. Before I left after 17 years in the last organization, yeah.
Wow.
So I've done all those roles.
All
really.
Those roles, yeah.
Yes.
And thank you so much. It's really good to hear, you know, you just leading in the development world. And I interviewed some other guests telling me kind of because he came from the corporate and went to the development world, the environment is different. So it would be good to just hear just your experience as a leader, the things that you found yourself developing. You said there are certain leadership abilities that you developed. What are some of like the key leadership abilities and skills that you develop and exercise in your leadership roles?
Learning to take an initiative, or learning to take initiative, not just sitting down for things to be done, but actually trying to figure out, you know, just learning to ask questions, to find out what's going on here. So in a sense, I think the skill to kind of study an environment and understand it, I think that's a very important leader for a skill, because you actually begin to know what you're dealing with. The ability to work with others, I think, has been a very important one. And know their skills, their giftings, their capacities, that has been something that I found very important over the years. The ability to grow a team, I think that has been completely fundamental. Because if you can't grow a team, you are stuck. You are as strong as your team. That's what I discovered with time. So if I had a good team, then I could sleep. You see what I mean? I mean, I didn't have to be so harassed, because I knew, you know, we understood where we were going with the rest of the team. So I realized actually the ability to grow a team is a very critical thing. And it makes you achieve a lot. The learning to motivate, you know, that skill is also another very important one. And of course, you have to be visionary. You need to know where you want to go in every situation, and the circumstances change. Just that ability to read the environment, to know who else is within your space, learning to network, learning to grow trust. If you don't have trust, you are in trouble. And learning to question. I think I've gained a lot from just learning to ask questions, because that way you learn. And knowing as a leader, you don't have to know it all. You just need to harness what is around you and focus people on where you want to go, and eventually you'll find your... That's how I would say those are some of the ones that just come to mind quickly.
Wow, yeah, thank you. I like the one, being a coach, the one asking questions. You know, asking questions is really a good way of learning, and really agree with you. Key lessons, you know, you have shared with us. Challenges, you know, let's talk a little bit about challenges. In your many years of leadership, what have kind of some challenges that you encountered and stretched your leadership and made you learn something or do something differently?
I think as a leader, especially in the non-profit space, there are lots of challenges, because you survive because you've managed to harness the resources you need to go where you want to go. So that's why that business of growing relationships, growing trust is not only important for when you're working with your team, but even for the people you want to work with. Because if they don't trust you, you don't go very far. And so sometimes in the process of building trust, you encounter challenges, not only in the team, but also with external actors. There are challenges sometimes I have experienced around, sometimes just being misunderstood, you know, and especially when you are strict with what you know as the rules to do the game, you will find challenges because there will be people who oppose you. Sometimes you have encountered situations where people want you to take shortcuts, or people want you to favor maybe a certain way or a certain route or a certain person for that matter, which may not be right, or get shortcuts. You know, you experience all these things. And there are challenges around when you're a leader. Sometimes you have to fire people maybe who are not performing, or be truthful about the fact that this is not going well. And that's not easy, because these are people you may have worked with. You know, with funders, sometimes you come across funders who are unfair or who might mistreat you. And you have to figure out how to deal with them, whether you want to continue working with them. And sometimes you have to maybe end some relationships, which might have been great. So I think in the nonprofit world, it is tough. There are all kinds of challenges, because you need the money, you need the work done. You have the communities who need to benefit from the work you're doing. But in between, you have a team, and you have the people who might give you the money. And then, of course, if you work with a board, sometimes you disagree with board. It's not funny at all. And learning to navigate your way with a board is not fun. Sometimes, because sometimes they may not be aligned, or some people may not be aligned, or some people may say false things about you, you know, and you have to find a way
to either stick it or make sure you say the things you know to be truthful and just stick with it and let people stay where they are, you know. So there are lots of challenges.
So Janet, what kept you motivated in staying the course of your leadership responsibility?
I must say, George, I saw my work as a calling. I think by the time I was going to 40, I was kind of so convinced about where I felt my giftings need to go or were going. And I had a passion for the work I was doing. I was very concerned about poor people and how can people get out of poverty, or how can you really work in impactful ways when you work with people. This for me has always been a passion. And so the question was, how do you work in a way which makes you effective? So I knew I wouldn't want to work for an organization which would fight that objective in me. So I had to find a personal alignment between myself and anybody I worked for. And so when I left working out of the country and I was coming back, I was so sure I could only go to an organization where there was a fit between myself and the organization and where it was going. So when I left, when I went and found an organization that was concerned about communities, that was concerned about sustainable development, not just doing things for people, that was concerned about building local institutions, those are things I was passionate about. So I could fight whatever I needed to fight so that I keep the course. So I don't think you struggle too much if you discover what your purpose is and you find a place where you can actually fulfill it. So while I was an employee, I knew I was also fulfilling my purpose. So I didn't fight with motivation, really. And so you put in hours, you put what it takes to get the job done. And I was happy to do that.
Well, I mean, thank you for sharing that. And you brought a very key aspect, passion and purpose. You know, and many people struggle just to discover that for themselves. For you, how did you come to discover that purpose and passion?
I think with time, you sort of figure out what are the things that give you satisfaction. And I think from a very early age, actually, by the time I was, even before I finished Form 4 and going from my Form 5 and 6, I sort of had an inclination towards what for me was the helping profession, but I didn't know what shape it would take. And I think somewhere along the line when I was doing my Form 5 and 6, somebody mentioned, by the way, you know, these days, Nairobi University has a course in social work. And so I think the third class that was beginning to do a degree program on social work. When I went to enroll for that course, I sort of have an idea. Yeah, I knew I'm going to get into some form, but I didn't know which form exactly. But even after I finished and I actually started a role in the ministry, it didn't take me long before I realized, no, what I do, I don't, it's not like I want to work in a children's home. No, I have a bigger mission. So the question was, how can I achieve large scale change? And I knew I can't achieve large scale change by being in doing what we used to call casework. You know, in the West, there's a lot of casework and working with people who are experiencing challenges. I knew I wanted to achieve large scale change. So after some exposure to large programs, a couple of different programs, the question was, how do you achieve large scale change? And then I knew this was leading me to learn to manage programs rather than be stuck in one place. And that's why before long, I was like, you need effective organizations. How do you achieve effective organizations? So I just kept going from one trajectory to another because I knew if you are going to achieve change, then you need organizations that are doing the right thing on the ground. How do you achieve that? So I think I just kept going from one thing to another. And eventually I was like, yeah, this is it. So I need to sharpen my skills around this area. So that's how I did OD. And now in my latter years, I was very happy to do coaching because then I realized all these things go together. Learning to deal with the people or to support or help the people who are running this organization. You need to have certain skills around how you work with them.
Lovely, lovely. When you're looking back, you know, I just sense that you enjoyed what you were doing because it was part of your passion and your purpose. So just looking back, you know, in those number of years of working, what are some of the things that you look back and you really feel happy when you think about them? Are there certain projects or certain things that you did that stand out for you over your leadership journey in your professional life?
I think the last role I did, I must say, I really enjoyed that role, which was extremely challenging because it involved heading a Kenyan or an African organization. And this was after I'd worked for international organizations. And getting to a point where for Africa to succeed, we need African institutions. How do you grow African institutions when they need money from somebody else? You know, for them to build and follow their mission, they have to raise resources. How do they create some independence so that they can stick to their agenda that they are finding relevant for Africa? That bothered me a lot. And so I was happy to be part of the process of growing a Kenyan organization because I felt this is what we need in Africa, not just in Kenya. It's just that I could only do one. And I realized that very often aid is delivered in a way that does not grow people. People end up doing what somebody wants, the person who is giving the money. So how do you grow an African organization that has its own resources so that it can stick to its agenda? And so I was really happy that after a long struggle, I did leave an organization that was still on that journey, but we had taken off. I think it's right to say we had taken off because I left an organization that was still solid. So of course, we still needed to continue. And the process of raising resources is a continuous one, as long as you're in the nonprofit world. But you still need to achieve a certain level of stability where you have some income sources that are not tied to anyone. So we managed to push the idea of building an endowment. We became one of the few organizations that had an endowment. We went beyond that, managed to create other alternative sources of raising resources so that the organization could achieve its mission. And so creating, you know, or rather building a 5-floor office block, which is on rent 100%, I mean, was a major achievement, a very challenging process. And that happened during my tenure. Creating ways or figuring out ways of structuring so that you have the part of the organization that does the work, but you have a part of an organization that raises resources for the organization. These were things that you can't read in a book. At least we didn't have books to read, which could tell us the answers. I was leading a team and working with a board to figure out how can we do this. And for me, I still think this is one of the things I'm really most happy about because in the end, we ended up with a foundation as the implementing agent, and we ended up with a trust as the holding agent. And as time went by and we had different things to raise resources, we actually realized we actually need a holding entity. We ended up creating an organization that had not just the implementing agents, the holding agent, but an investment company as the coordinating body for pursuing investments for the foundation. So even just figuring the structuring, doing things that I'd never gone to do in school, learning to manage a property, I'd never gone to school to manage, to find tenants. I ended up doing that at some point before we got a person, a specialist to do that. I know more about investments than I ever knew, you know. So all these are things I really never went to school to study, but I was thrown in a very challenging role. So for me, as I look back, this is the kind of thing that I think I'm most proud about. And the journey is continuing for the team that I left behind. The foundation really is there. And there are things that the foundation can do now because of that hard work that we did, you know, at that point. So I think that's, for me, that's the most satisfying thing that I have. And I have learned a lot through that process.
Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that. Definitely. Starting something new in Africa and something that is self-sustaining, you know, it's definitely a challenge because we are known to be people who just want to beg. You know, we can't stand on our own. So for you, when you look back at your leadership journey, and thank you for sharing some of the victories, what has kept you developing in that area in your life? I know you said there are certain things that you did, but what are some of the key things if you had to talk to a new leader? And from your experience, you're sharing nuggets or secrets of just how to stay sharp in your leadership edge. What would be some of the things you would say to this young leader?
One of the things which has helped me over the years is kind of appreciating or recognizing all the time that I don't know everything. I just know some little things here and there. And so keeping a learning mind all the time, and that I don't actually have to have all the answers. So for me, learning to work with a team, learning to figure out what do we need, what is changing here, what is challenging. You know that thing of, as you ask those questions, you don't have all the answers yourself. But when you create an environment where everyone can contribute, you all begin to figure out the answers. And so you are all searching. So you have a learning mind. As I said before, when I was asking myself, how do I grow local organizations? I realized I need to learn a little bit more about how organizational change happens. So, of course, I enrolled to do an OD program, which was available at the time. And we actually did it with a couple of other leaders from the continent. And that was very, very helpful. And so at that point, I realized there's a skill I needed that I actually did not have, you know. And of course, over time in my leadership journey, I have had opportunities to connect and network with other like-minded people. So the exposure has been very, extremely useful. Attending, you know, meetings or conferences where people are dealing with similar things like I was doing. So learning to connect and keep networks that are aligned in their thinking, for me, has also been something that has continued to challenge and to help me, you know, kind of learn new things. And sometimes just visit other people who are doing so that I could learn on the job or learn by visiting other foundations outside, even outside Kenya, even outside Africa. And of course, when we were really struggling with how do you grow investments, trying to see who else has done things like this, which other people have tried to do things, how do others invest? How do others grow assets for nonprofits? And of course, I must say, by God's grace, I had at different times, of course, we had people who are willing. When at one time when we worked with the Ford Foundation, they gave us the opportunity to learn from other foundations in the US, and that's how we learned about endowments. But of course, the Kenya context was extremely different from the way it runs in the US. And even here, you know, the legal framework. So we had to really, in a sense, we were doing what does not have an ABC anywhere, just figuring it out ourselves and trying to, in any situation or environment where people don't have trust, how do you create structures that people can trust? And that's how we ended up with a complex arrangement where to govern the endowment, for example, we needed to have an administrator and a fund manager, which is that in other contexts may not necessarily be like that, you know. So it's really learning to learn from others who have done and keeping our options open, keeping a learning mind. So for me, that was very, very useful. And I think continuous reflection. So and trying to see what you need at this particular time. So as I was moving more towards the end of my tenure, then I realized, so what am I likely to enjoy doing at this point? And the more I thought about helping other people who are experiencing things I experienced, I then realized, yeah, I think I need to actually take a course in coaching. So that's how I started doing coaching, and I have enjoyed it tremendously. To get into that space where you actually change your mindset from now being the one who leads to actually training a team and learning with others and learning from other coaches, that has been a very enriching experience. So constantly reevaluating, where am I? What do I need now to do this new assignment? So in a sense, it kind of means just having a mind that is reflective, a questioning mind, where are we, what do we need, what am I lacking at this particular time, What can I add value? What else can I do so that I'm better able to do what I'm doing? And keeping the networks that are within the framework of things that I want to continue doing. I think all those things have kept me learning new skills. And I don't think it has ended.
No, I don't think it's ended. It seems you still have that learning mindset and growing in yourself, even in this new phase of your professional life. So what are some of the things, Janet, that you avoided that may have dampened your leadership, your productivity? Well, there are things that you decided, I'll avoid some of these things because they are negative to my leadership.
I think it's important to surround yourself with the similar-minded people and avoid people who are going in a direction that is contrary to yours. And if you find people are not having similar values like yourself, I think just avoiding those, because then you don't have to keep fighting. And I found it great to kind of have a board that we were aligned in terms of where we wanted to go. Because a board is so important. If you start fighting with your board, you won't want to stay anywhere. You will struggle so hard. So being aligned, finding people aligned, and keeping, if you find this, you know, really trying hard to check on people as much as possible. Because even in your team, if you find some people don't share in your values and where the organization is going, you're going to struggle. So it's better to find a way to end those kind of relationships. And just aligning more with people who share your kind of vision, your ambition, and values. I think values is a very fundamental thing. Otherwise, if you fight over values, you are not going very far. Yeah. And so when we say we want to be people of integrity, you actually are people of integrity. You won't compromise on this. You actually stick to that. So those, I think, are very, very important. You compromise, you are not yourself anymore.
If you compromise, then you're not yourself, then who are you? You know, who are
exactly.
You? Who are you and what are you trying to do? Definitely yes. That affects. All right, even as we start winding up, a few questions I like to ask. In terms of, now you are in this new phase, you're a coach, you're also, I think, an OD consultant. Yes, how's that been?
I, of course, realize that we get so absorbed in the jobs we do that there's a lot we don't really pay attention to in our own lives. So it's been great to kind of not have a packed schedule. I mean, a real blessing. I don't know how to describe it. It's like I can breathe. Nobody breathing on me. I can just walk around. I walk around. I eat berries in my garden, you know. I can say I'm going to play golf every other day. So just that freedom to sort of think, not be under pressure, you know, take time to reflect on my own personal things. I said I'm a farmer, been able to reflect on my farming model, and I've made some changes. You know, which I would not have had time to do if I was still on my crazy job. And then also beginning to choose assignments that are still aligned to my interests. I still have an interest of committing to how can the aid industry work in a more effective way in the continent? How can we grow more organizations that are serious, that are doing real genuine work that is empowering people and allowing people in Africa to take charge? Those are things. How do you grow leaders for the field? So in a sense, I'm more aligned towards taking assignments that are in line with my own passion. So I'm trying very much to stick with that. And I don't want to do anything. So I'm more doing stuff that is around how can we really grow the kind of Africa that we want? How can we grow organizations? How can we grow leaders? How can we deal with some of the, you know, serious challenges around, you know, the way aid has been sort of delivered in the continent, so that we end up with more lasting change, more impactful programs happening. So in a sense, I'm trying very much to stick with assignments that allow me to stick with those areas of passion so that I'm still going within my my trajectory of interest. That way I'm not fighting myself. I don't want to fight myself. I want to enjoy my life. So
it's very important. It's very important. Enjoying one's life. That's very important. And I agree with you. And talking about the continent and the development world, and you now being an executive leadership coach, a certified one. You know, in this program, I like to ask this question. So what kind of leadership does Africa need to really achieve and aspire to that place that it really needs to be at? You know, in every area, but now even talking more particularly in your area of experience in the development world, what kind of leaders need to arise to enable us fully, you know, benefit from what we need to benefit fully from?
I actually think we need more authentic leaders, leaders who stand for something, not leaders who say yes to everything. I even think in government we have lost sometimes because we have had sometimes people in high official, in high positions who don't necessarily face, you know, when they go to negotiate for countries, they're not necessarily being genuine about what is good for us as a continent, what really works for us, you know. Sometimes we, all sorts of things are thrown to the continent and we accept. And the reason we accept is because there are leaders who are not standing for anything. I think it's very dangerous to be a leader who doesn't stand for anything, who is not driven by the interest of Africa, by the needs that are there in the continent. So we need leaders who really can be genuine and authentic about these things. Leaders who are values driven, I believe. Who stand for, you know, leaders of integrity, you know, people who would not negotiate for anything that makes Africa the loser, you know, and then genuinely thinking about our needs, the needs that are there, especially for the masses, because there are a lot of people who are struggling or suffering because they just don't have the right information. They could farm better if only they knew. They could protect the environment. If only they knew, they could, their children in school could be learning, but that environment where a child actually learns and is growing from one level to another has to be created with different people engaged in, you know, there are many simple things that can be done, but we need honest people who are not thinking about themselves, but are thinking about the continent and how to make life better and easier for everyone, you know. So I really think we need honest, serious, authentic, trustful, value-driven individuals who are thinking about the good of others, not themselves, honestly.
And I agree. I agree so much. And you've nailed it so well. People who have Africa at their heart or the communities at their heart and they stand for them. And if they don't stand for them, unfortunately, they may stand for themselves. Yeah, and if they don't stand for those ones, yeah, so we really hope that those are people we shall. My hope, Janet, is that I will live to see, you know, even if it's 40, 50 years from now, I will live to see such kind of leaders arise and Africa taking a turn and fully exploiting its full potential. You know, that's my prayer and that's my hope. And you've said it quite well. Thank you so much. So, Janet, this is my favorite question as I end this podcast. And the question is, so Janet, you've given us your leadership story. What is the moral of your leadership story?
Whatever I have become is really by God's grace. There's no magic about it. I am not a clever. I wouldn't consider myself a clever. You know, you have some of these very clever people. So for me, anyone can rise to be anything. Because I was nothing magical, you know.
I was this young little girl who could not even pass as well as the siblings, you know. And I'm not necessarily a sharp person or anything. So for me, I think the biggest thing I've learned is each one of us have potential. We can grow. We can become anything. So as the opportunities are opened and, you know, some investments are made, exposure, we can just grow and become very transformative people. So no magic, all of us can grow to become anything and become part of the people that are making the world a much better place, because we are rising up to use our talents, our giftings, and so we are becoming change makers. So we all can become change makers. We just need to rise up to it.
Wow. Wow. Thank you. What a good way of ending today's podcast. And thank you so much, Janet, for giving us your time, sharing your story and your nuggets, and just helping us to glean into your leadership experiences and taking some things that will make us live, lead, and learn more, even to be better as leaders. Thank you very much. And wish you all the best, even as you enjoy this new season of yourself. So thank you so much, Janet.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity too.
Thank you for joining us in today's podcast. We hope you're leaving with insights that will help you live and lead better. We appreciate our sponsors, BNG Consultants Limited and BNG Center for Leadership Coaching, for keeping us on air. Bye for now. See you in our next episode.